I don't know if I've ever told my Twitter story, but I've had a time hop moment pop up to me from 7 years ago, which made me think I might tell this story. Time hop was a series of tweets that I made about being relieved that my network on Twitter were able to give me really sound advice about whether to travel to London or not. And so it was this time, 7 years ago, and there had been horrific snow. And there were stories of London freezing over, that some buildings were dangerously slippery, but there was no snow as yet where I was. Now, I had to travel down to London to an equity meeting, and I was looking for news. I was looking at the website of East Midlands trains at the time, and there was just nothing. There was no even... I remember it so clearly. And I kind of felt that I shouldn't travel, but I really wanted to go to the meeting. And it was when I discovered the hashtag UK snow. And the idea about that hashtag, some of you might know it, is that you hashtagged UK snow and then you included the first four digits of your postcode. So for me at the time, it was NG02 or NG2. And this fabulously was being aggregated onto a map, which is the first time I'd ever seen this being done, where somebody was taking data from tweets, putting it into whatever it was put into, and generating a diagram that was usable. I mean, now I know that it's the use of big data and it's the use of collaborative input, small pieces of data being collected collaboratively from devices and apps which come together to build up a bigger picture. But the thing for me and why I wanted to tell this story is that it was the first time that Twitter had a tangible sense that I was able to use it to make active decisions. I was introduced to Twitter in the end of 2006, beginning of 2007, working for an event where I was just going to run the day. So I was attending the event. It was Media Camp. It was Media Camp Books. And I'd organised some online events previously in a virtual world, Second Life, which included using text messaging to make sure that performers were ready in their remote studios, that they'd got the audio link that they'd put into their browser within the virtual world, so that when their set came up, they were able to play through into the virtual world, and we had a party. And there's two particular events that I'd helped coordinate. One was Love in the Summer, where I took on sort of an ambassador role, it was called, where people who are used to working in the Second Life environment would kind of moderate a space, but it was a virtual space. And the second one, which was about this time of year actually, and it's come up on my time hop a few times in the last few days, was swimwear in the snow. Because one of the things that I really did like, and still do like, about virtual world, and I do have a soft spot for Second Life, is the no boundaries. The fact that you can experiment with buildings and you can experiment with shapes and constructions, and you can build things that are totally fantastical, because there is no health and safety, and because you can defy thermodynamics of materials. It is a great way to see some very spectacular structures. And of course, also the five senses, that you've got sight and sound in a virtual world, but as of yet, there is no touch, there is no smell, and there is no other sense, which at the moment of the five senses, yes, I'm sure you all know it is. But yes, we did swimwear in the snow, because also you don't feel the cold. And we just thought it would be a way at this time of year of just doing something wonderful that you just could not do in the real world. And that had some bands. And anyway, the event that I did in the physical world in 2006-2007, I would normally get email addresses for people to contact them when they arrive, when they leave. Anyway, this particular group were using a platform that I'd never heard of called Twitter. And they were using Twitter like mass text messaging, where someone would arrive at an airport, and someone did, and they announced that they were at terminal wherever. Somebody, they were collectively watching this Twitter stream, and they elected between them who was going to go and pick up the person. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And my initial thought of it was to aggregate text messaging and using the embed. At the time, I was very keen to use embeddable materials in different websites to embed it, so that arts projects that had remote groups could actually send a tweet via a text message, and it would be able to update a central website embed, which is awesome. So anyway, that's how I discovered Twitter, and I thought I was incredibly behind the times, and and since found out that probably wasn't quite as behind the times as I thought I was. But since then, there has been a fantastic explosion of, I think, what I've kind of come to know as social technologies. Technologies which inherently drive and contribute and amplify and complement our human ability to want to be social. And I think there's been a long time working out how that works. And sadly, and I think this is another reason why it's quite poignant for me today, it kind of reached a plateau. And I've seen things about Twitter at the moment where they're not being able to get new members, and you know, the new members is dropping off. And I think one of the sad things is it's just the proliferation of the business voice. And I know people are wanting to do business, but one of the things that right at the beginning of my Twitter journey that I learned via a song, actually, which was Twitter is the art of self-promotion without getting caught. Now, 95% of Twitter, I would say, at least the people that have ended up in my Twitter streams, haven't quite grasped that fact, and I think it's really, really sad. And it came to light really over Christmas when I was just peeked in to see if there was anybody tweeting, because I know some people can be quite alone at Christmas, and it just got this overwhelming sense of automated crap. And I think it's really sad, because it is a really powerful platform, and it's kind of got lost in translation. A lot of people are still, who aren't on Twitter that I come across, just don't see the point, in very much the same way as the people I talked to back in 2007 didn't see the point. And the point is, as I finish this, I'm sorry to have rambled on, the point is, there are moments of poignant clarity with Twitter. The connection with a network, the knowledge that there was a group of people that I encountered in the physical world, that when I returned to my desk on the Monday morning, there was still this residual chatter that I had never seen or never experienced before. And it was really immediate, and because I knew those people, it was real. And I think that has got lost a bit, and I think it's a shame. But those stories, and where I am today with Twitter, is a bit of a crossroads, because I know it's this powerful tool, and I know that it has the power to connect, and I know that it has the power to inform, and I know that it has the power to educate. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's working anymore. Didn't expect that to come out at the end. Still, I am going to finish with my favourite Twitter experience, where I was walking down the road between St Pancras and the British Library, and I took a photograph on Instagram, and as I looked at the photograph and I was pacing down the road and the rhythm of my pace conjured up to me just a little tune, which was St Pancras to the left of me, British Library to the right. Here I am, and I was pacing at that beat, and I posted my tweet. There was no hashtag on it. I was working on a project at the time called Ambition, with lots of arts and culture organisations. So I thought I'd got a little bit of a community watching. And when I arrived at Equity head office, I looked and found a comment beneath it from the British Library saying, "Stuck in the middle with you."